much of the new science is suggesting that things are changing faster and to a greater extent than we thought.
A major report on climate change draws some sobering conclusions about Alaska and the Arctic. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 3rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a geologist works to deliver new information on oil reserves in Anwar, despite a vexing challenge.
There's no new data. We have no reason to think differently today than we did 20 years ago.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
The state of Alaska is appealing a decision that would open Democratic Party primaries to independents. Attorney General Jana Lindemuth filed a notice of appeal today with the Alaska Supreme Court. Lindemuth disagrees with a Superior Court decision from October. That decision found the state is restricting Alaska Democrats' attempts to attract independent voters by not allowing unaffiliated candidates to participate in party primaries. Lindemuth says the case presents constitutional questions the state Supreme Court should decide. The Alaska Democratic Party had challenged a state law requiring primary election candidates to be registered members of the party whose nomination they're seeking. Democrats wanted the law to be considered unconstitutional to the extent it restricts candidate participation to registered members when party rules allow for non-member candidates. The state party adopted such a rule last year. The case could have implications for Governor Bill Walker's reelection effort. Walker, an independent who appointed Lindemuth to the attorney general post, won with the Democratic Party's support and with a registered Democrat as his lieutenant governor. Walker said when he and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott filed for reelection in August that they were not planning to run in a primary, but the court's decision, whatever it is, could make it an option. Climate change is happening, we're the cause, and Alaska will feel it first. Those are some of the conclusions of a sweeping report out today from 13 federal agencies and outside climate scientists. The report was released by the Trump administration, even though it contradicts the position of President Trump and many of his top officials. Rachel Waldholtz from Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
Catherine Hayhoe is a climate scientist at Texas Tech University and a lead author on the report. She says the bottom line is pretty simple.
This report is a huge 600-plus page document that can be summarized in just one sentence. Climate is changing. Humans are responsible. The risks are real. And the window of time to fix this thing is narrowing fast.
The report is part of the Fourth National Climate Assessment, a study looking at impacts across the U.S. and required by law every 4 years. Hayhoe says it confirms once again that burning fossil fuels produces carbon dioxide and other emissions that are warming the planet. It says we're now living through the warmest period in the history of modern civilization. And it says it's extremely likely that human activities are the dominant cause of that warming, adding there is no convincing alternative explanation. Hayhoe says, if anything, the report suggests things are worse than expected.
Much of the new science that we've seen coming out in the last few years is suggesting that things are changing faster and to a greater extent than we thought.
Like the ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica melting faster than expected and sea levels rising faster than expected. Hayhoe says what keeps her and other climate scientists up at night is the question of tipping points. They worry if we cross certain thresholds, it can create vicious cycles, driving more warming and pushing the climate into totally unpredictable territory. She says it's not clear exactly when we might cross those lines.
Just like you can't put a specific number on how many cigarettes you can smoke before you develop lung problems. But what we can say absolutely is the further and faster we push the Earth's climate away from its natural state, the greater the risk that we will hit one or more of these tipping points.
The report includes a full chapter on Alaska and the Arctic. It confirms that scientists are very confident the region has warmed more than twice as fast as the rest of the planet, and that climate change is melting glaciers, accelerating the loss of sea ice, and thawing permafrost. The report also suggests that changes in the Arctic could affect weather around the globe, but scientists don't understand those dynamics well enough yet to make predictions. Hayhoe says the good news is there are solutions out there, like the faster-than-expected adoption of renewable energy.
Things are happening all around the world. We're moving in the right direction. But as a climate scientist, I know that we have to not just keep on moving in that direction, we have to do more and faster to avoid the really serious and even dangerous impacts.
With that conclusion, Hayhoe and others are ringing the alarm bells. The question is whether enough people are listening. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waltholz in Anchorage.
All eyes were on a Senate hearing in Washington, D.C. yesterday as Democrats and Republicans sparred over whether to drill for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But one scientist whose work could sway the Arctic Refuge's future wasn't in Washington. He was here in Alaska giving a talk to an industry group. David Hausnick works for the U.S. Geological Survey, and he's trying to figure out two key questions. How much oil is in the Arctic Refuge, and where is it? The answers could decide ANWR's fate, no matter how the politics play out. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk was there and has the story.
David Hausnick's audience was packed with industry people and their political allies, eager for clues on where more oil might be hiding in the Arctic. But Hausnick wanted to make one thing clear right off the bat. He doesn't like taking sides.
I'm one of those persons who has always been registered independent voter, never missed an election, and always felt like people who belong to one of the two parties ought to be taken out behind the woodshed somewhere.
That statement was met with silence from the crowd. As much as Hausnick would like to avoid politics, he's the guy who has to figure out the Arctic Refuge's oil potential. And that puts him in the crosshairs of a decades-long environmental fight.
The thing about my job is that regardless of the estimate that we make, half of the population seems to be unhappy with us. So, you know, through the years, as the administration goes from one party to the other, the bruises get equally distributed across my back.
Hausnick is bracing for some new bruises. The Trump administration has tasked his team with coming up with a new estimate of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge's oil potential. The last one was done in 1998. Hausnick explained coming up with a new estimate is a challenge, mainly because he really doesn't have much to work with.
In essence, there's nothing new there. We have not assessed or reassessed the ANWR area for 20 years because there's no new data. We have no reason to think differently today than we did 20 years ago.
There's been only one exploration well drilled in the Arctic Refuge's coastal plain, and Hausnick can't access the results. It's kept under lock and key by the companies that drilled the well. And the data Hausnick does have access to was collected in the 1980s with old technology. At the moment, all he can do is reprocess the old data using new technology. But the Trump administration is making a controversial push to allow what's called 3D seismic testing in the Arctic Refuge's coastal plain. That could give geologists a much clearer picture of how much oil might be there. Hausnick warned his audience that the results of that testing might not be what they're hoping for.
If a 3D data survey were collected on the ANWR coastal plain and we interpreted that survey and did an assessment, there's no guarantee that numbers will go up or numbers will go down, right?
If the Trump administration manages to allow 3D seismic testing in the Arctic Refuge, Hausnick would have a much better idea of its oil potential. He might see evidence that there are giant, easily recoverable oil pools hiding deep beneath the coastal plain. Or he might not. Either way, it will have a big influence on what happens to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But speaking to reporters after his talk, Hausnick said it isn't his job to think about that.
To be honest with you, we don't care about that when we're doing the assessment because that's policy.
Yeah.
So we're trying to look at the whole geological picture and evaluate what's there. And the policy issues come later and do not involve me. Right?
Hausnick expects to finish his new assessment of the Arctic Refuge's oil potential late next year. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
The Alaska House is scheduled to spend the weekend debating Senate Bill 54, legislation that aims to increase some criminal penalties that were reduced under legislation passed last year. The House Finance Committee sent the bill to the entire House yesterday. The committee voted 9-2 to advance the bill. Wasilla Republican Representative Kathy Tilton and North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson voted no. The Department of Corrections estimates the bill would cost nearly $3 million per year after committee members asked for a precise estimate. The cost reduces the savings from Senate Bill 91 by 7%. That's the law the legislature passed last year that changed criminal penalties. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, rich history on Fort Greeley.
There's about 450 archaeological sites just in the eastern part of Donnelly Training Area that have been identified.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
In the aftermath of the Polaris Hotel fire in Nome, which raged for more than half of the day on Tuesday, a body has been found and identified. 63-year-old Betty Hogan of Nome was recovered from the debris of the burnt building. Hogan's body has been sent to the state medical examiner's office for an autopsy. Megan Peters, a spokesperson with the Alaska Department of Public Safety, says two investigators are conducting on-site investigation into the cause of the fire. Once their work is done at the scene, they will return to Anchorage. Peters says she is unsure of how long the investigators will be in Nome or when they will release information on what caused the fire. For now, the City of Nome's Department of Public Works has secured the Polaris Hotel building. According to a statement from the city, damages from the fire are estimated to be more than $750,000. An animal welfare official says claims against Dallas Seavey that he mistreats his sled dogs are unfounded. On Wednesday, a spokesperson for the Matanuska Susitna Borough said an animal care officer visited Seavey's Willow Kennel last weekend to investigate. According to the borough, Officer Nick Uplis closed his investigation after failing to find any evidence of neglect or cruelty. In the release, Borough Mayor Vern Halter, himself a musher, called the claims absolutely false. The allegations from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, surfaced last week after an Iditarod veteran wrote on her blog that she'd heard stories of mistreatment in Seavey's kennel. The accusations came on the heels of news that four of Seavey's dogs had tested positive for a banned painkiller after last year's Iditarod. PETA quickly seized on both incidences as evidence of abusive practices and mushing, which the organization has long condemned. The group requested that the Alaska Department of Public Safety look into the abuse claims. DPS spokesperson Tim Despain says the state trooper's case into Seavey's kennel practices is still open, but expected to be closed in the next couple days. Seavey did not return a message left seeking comment. In a statement, a PETA executive said the organization will submit a public records request to local officials to gather more information. The Yukon Quest is clarifying its rule banning performance-enhancing drugs. A press release issued by the Quest says all dog teams are required to be clear of prohibited drugs. Quest Rules Committee Chair Kathleen McGill says that means mushers can face disciplinary action if banned drugs show up in their dogs. Quest head veterinarian Christina Hansen says urine samples taken from Quest dogs before, during, and after the race between Fairbanks and Whitehorse are screened for a broad spectrum of banned drugs. Wild Alaska salmon is making its mark in this year's global market. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
It was a generally good salmon season for Alaska, except for one species.
It was a disastrous year for Chinook harvest.
That's Andy Wink, a seafood economist with the consulting firm McDowell Group. Wink says, while king salmon may be the most famous salmon species among Alaskans, it also makes up the lowest total value of all the different commercial salmon species.
Sockeye, pink salmon, chum salmon, those are the species that, for the commercial fleet, really move the needle in terms of total value.
Wink says Alaska's chum season stood out in the global market.
We've seen higher prices on fillets and on frozen H&G chum as well, which is really, you know, kind of amazing to see. When you get a record harvest, usually prices would go down with that additional supply. But this was a very unique year where it just worked out that, you know, other fisheries around the world were kind of in a downswing and ours peaked.
Japan catches a lot of chum and produces a lot of roe. Wink says Alaska is the second market consumers turn to when Japan's harvest falls, like it did this year. He says 2017 is seeing higher roe prices for both chum and pink salmon, and that can play into overall market success. He says in 2013, pink prices went over 40 cents a pound.
And there's a lot of things that kind of came together to create that situation and to create that price. And it was just a lot of things that, you know, were kind of external factors, but ended up benefiting Alaska pink prices. But one of the main things was roe. Roe accounted for like 40% of pink value from that year.
He says roe is unique to wild salmon. That means it doesn't face competition from farm salmon, unlike with fillets. Wink says a lot of big markets and other chains will turn to farm salmon if the prices are good, but he says farm salmon prices are up, which makes wild salmon all the more valuable. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Dig Dug. Anthropologists with the University of Alaska Fairbanks say a site they're excavating near the Delta River west of Fort Greeley was first inhabited by people some 13,000 years ago. These humans would have crossed over a now submerged land bridge that connected Asia and North America. The crew says that's just one of the many discoveries they've made, and they're just beginning to uncover its secrets. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Here's the camp over to the left.
It takes a half-hour Jeep ride to get to where the road peters out several miles into an Army training range west of Fort Greeley, where you have to get out and hike. Then another half-hour or so on foot before you reach the site that sits atop a ridge overlooking the Delta River.
But look, it's a pretty view from up here.
Wow. That's where UAF anthropology professor Ben Potter and a dozen workers spent much of last summer excavating material that he says suggests the Delta River overlook site is among the oldest known human-occupied places in North America.
10 different times people came to the site and laid material down. The earliest is around 13,000 years ago, so some of the earliest people in the continent. So that's very exciting.
Potter says the site would have been the perfect vantage point for ancient hunters to scan the Delta River plain for such big game as bison, which ranged throughout the area during warmer periods between many ice ages. The elevated location also led the Army to bulldoze the spot in 1978 to carve out an observation point for soldiers to use during field training exercises. Later that year, the gravelly material exposed by the ensuing erosion caught the eye of Chuck Holmes, a grad student surveying the area under contract with the Army.
We
saw lag deposits. That's where the sand had blown away and erosion was down to where the silt occurs. And so in this lag deposit, there were artifacts and bones and things.
Holmes is now an affiliate research professor of anthropology at UAF, who's helping the next generation of anthropologists carefully scrape their way down to artifacts. But he can't help but note the irony of the fact that if the Army hadn't bladed the area, it may never have been discovered.
This is what got it all started. The Army comes out to do an observation point. Otherwise, who knows if anyone would come back here and look.
Julie Esdale's an anthropologist with Fort Wainwright's Environmental Division, and she's helping Potter's team coordinate the excavation with the Army. She says there are many more such sites scattered around the 600,000-acre Donnelly training area.
There's about 450 archaeological sites just in the eastern part of Donnelly training area that have been identified.
Potter, the project's principal investigator, says many of the sites have the same sorts of soils and conditions that preserve artifacts for thousands of years.
That's kind of an unparalleled record. There's nowhere that I'm aware of in all of North or South America where you have that density of sites.
Potter says the artifacts reveal the site was used by the early inhabitants to process the game they harvested. He says he and his team were thrilled last year when they came across the jawbone of a juvenile bison at the site, and he says an analysis of the teeth showed the animal was killed in midwinter, which in turn proves that in some years, humans inhabited the site year-round, even during the cold season.
As far as my knowledge, this is the first winter occupation we can definitively say that we found in Beringia, east or west.
Beringia is the region that encompasses most of Alaska, eastern Siberia, and the land bridge that once connected the two continents and which is now submerged below the Bering Sea. Potter says he and his team began working in earnest at the Delta River overlook 2 summers ago, and he says they're just getting started.
It looks like a big excavation, but it's, you know, maybe 2%, 5% of the overall area. So it's we're just scratching the surface, no pun intended.
Potter and his crew of mainly UAF anthropology students did appear to be scratching away at the site using only hand tools, mainly trowels, which they used to extract what seemed like a tablespoonful of soil at a time. Others, like Cassidy Phillips, were screening soil through wire mesh in search of tiny relics.
Well, looking for little flakes like this or bigger, any type of tools.
As Phillips gently shook and scraped the soil around on the screen, a flat fleck of stone a bit bigger than a grain of rice became visible.
That's a small one right there.
The flakes are a byproduct of the cutting tools that early humans were fashioning at the site, and they're all over the place, says UAF anthropology postdoc Holly McKinney.
I have found flakes, a piece of ochre, bones.
The camaraderie, music, and occasional outbursts of laughter around the site might lead a visitor to conclude it seems like the ultimate archaeological sandbox. Potter says his crew enjoys the work, but he says they're serious about the science.
As we look around with people with shovels and trowels, it's hard work. It's on the one hand, intellectually very stimulating and exciting, but it's we've got to move a lot of dirt to get done. And we use tiny tools.
Potter says the tiny artifacts those tools uncover are helping him and his colleagues make big discoveries about Alaska's first inhabitants. At the Donnelly Training Area near Fort Greeley, I'm Tim Ellis.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Hunter McGovern in Anchorage. McGovern is a member of Doctors Without Borders and just got back from a 7-month assignment in Nigeria.
I was coming back from a long road trip and a trip to Thailand, and really was set on having Thanksgiving with my mom and sisters here in Anchorage. And so I, in Seattle, got my truck, got it started again, and started this trip back to Anchorage. And I had pretty much 2 days to do it in the end of November. And through lack of sleep and driving a lot, I drove all the way back. And about halfway through that trip, there was only one radio station that was available, and I was just full volume to keep myself going and awake, and it was Canadian Public Broadcasting. And there was an interview on there with a woman, and she just talked about her experiences. I believe it was in Central African Republic. And that little bit really sold me. I got home in time, had dinner with my family, and told my mom at the end that I was going to sign up for Doctors Without Borders, and she She looked at me and said, good luck with that. This area was already subject to periodic, you know, times of famine based on droughts and whatnot. So you take a very fragile population and then you add a conflict in their area, and the result is widespread famine and kind of disparity. The ability to be very flexible and adjust constantly to changing situations, yeah, that was very helpful. You know, one moment you're building a hospital and the next moment you're fixing a Toyota. The more places I see, the more I realize how wonderful me and my friends and my family have it. You can go get a job, you can make pretty good money, the water's clean, the air's clean, it's beautiful. The people are generally really nice, you know, I mean, I'm sure if you own a car, you've broken down at some point on the side of the road, and when you're in Alaska, people stop and offer you help, you know, and that's not the case everywhere. A lot of times our worldview is very, almost accepts our reality as that's everyone's reality. And how good we have it and how nice this place is.
Hunter McGovern lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Tim Ellis and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Grove, Zachariah Hughes, Rachel Waldholtzen, Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station.
The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.